We're here to talk about the artist Bill Cummins, who most people still don't know passed away in mid-February. And it's worth noting that a lot of people don't know who Bill Cummins is. So why don't you say a little bit about Bill and how you knew him?
Bill is a very interesting guy, a kind of a curmudgeon if you walked into him on the street. Could be a little abrasive, but really it was his humor. He created this wonderful art almost out of an uncontrollable energy that he had. And so I first learned of him through his art way back in a small gallery in Manitou Springs. And then met him somewhere along the way and eventually worked with him when I was doing some guest curatorial work for the Fine Arts Center. And I think that was in 2002. And then got to know him pretty well, went to his house, met his wife, toured his studio, and started to hear all kinds of crazy stories and ideas about how he makes his art.
I interviewed him at the same time as the Fine Arts Center show and did this article called Portrait of the Artist as an Old Man for the Indie when I was working there. And the first thing that I was really sort of taken aback by was his really strident right-wing beliefs. I think they were strident in name only because he had such other sort of bizarre ideas about things. And he was a really like sort of almost a hippie in his health obsessions and the food that he would eat. And yet he really believed strongly that that everyone should vote Republican. And he would, you know, he would make offhanded comments like all bad artists should be killed. And of course, all, you know, followed up with this tongue-in-cheek laughter. But there was a part of him that was just so endlessly opinionated and yet didn't believe, seemed to not believe a word of it, even as he said it.
Well, that's true. It's a very important observation about him because, yes, he could come off very aggressive and brusque and strongly opinionated and challenge all kinds of people you'd find in the art worlds these days because he was so opposite of the sort of liberal, open-minded person creating art most of the time. But he would reveal cracks in his fortress there. And pretty soon, if you just let him talk for a while, you'd find him just kind of jumping all over the place. And I think he was, in a way, feeling out who he was talking to.
Hmm.
You know, of course, looking for somebody to agree with him. But I think Bill couldn't stay on a single track through anything. And so the mythology of a right-wing position was something that he cultivated. Well, he cultivated, but it was, you know, he created his own little touchstone there that maybe helped him because he was highly distractible. And you in any talks he'd give about his work or process, you'd see he would just jump to this idea, to that idea, to another idea. So I think he needed, you know, most people like that do need some sort of constancy or they'll just explode.
One of the ideas that he had that he liked to talk about was the idea that he was going to live to be 120 years old, which was part of his diet obsession, that he felt like if he ate right and kept fit, which he was very fit physically, that he would live to be 120.
Yeah, he was fit. I think he practiced yoga. He was, you know, I would say he's also mentally alert and very bright-eyed. He was very entertaining, and he would get people to laugh. In the middle of talking about anything, he'd start laughing. He'd say something just to get a jolt out of somebody. He'd laugh to let you know that it was not, you know, he wasn't all that serious about what he had just said. Or, you know, he could see the flaws in it. And Bill's process was like that, too. He would start making something and then get an idea and jump off to this other process and bring it back And pretty soon, you know, he had this way of layering processes and images and these things would become so complex and rich, you couldn't deconstruct them and he wouldn't tell you how he made them. But I think that's kind of how he was.
One of the processes that he used that was immediately apparent when you would walk into his studio was wintergreen transfer because his entire studio just reeked of wintergreen. And even when he wasn't using it, he had his files full of these pieces, this big, what was it, 26 by 20 sheets of paper that he always used, same size, these beautiful, rich sort of buttery papers. And even when he wasn't using that, it all just smelled of wintergreen.
Yeah. In talking with his wife recently following his death, she was saying that his grandchildren associate that with him, that grandpa just smelled like wintergreen all the time.
It's like he had put Bengay over as aftershave when he woke up in the morning.
It was kind of a telltale piece of the process that, you know, just permeated his whole house, and the memories of people he's left behind.
His work, the imagery in his work, I think, spoke to that sort of dead serious and jokey kind of undermining of his own opinions and thoughts all at once. Technically, he was just an amazing draftsman, and yet he always wanted to convey these really elaborate ideas that I'm not entirely sure that, you know, most people were going to pick up on.
Yeah, it seems like you'd be surprised if a story had an end, because he could add something to it and add something to it, and it would just go on and on and on. But his art making might have helped him with that sort of thing. He was drawn to narratives of, you know, biblical catastrophes and shame and guilt and stuff like that, hell and death and sex.
Bill said at one point in the interview that I did with him, my art is about life and death and what's going on. Every piece I make has some kind of idea about it, about what's happening today. I very rarely do a picture to make a pretty picture. You've got to make art that has meaning. You have to influence the younger generation. You have to shock them. You have to shock and awe art. And he laughs. I mean, the day of painting pretty pictures is over. I mean, we are in a lot of trouble here in Western civilization. We've got people at our throats. Rome is gone. If I had the means, I'd move out of here immediately because I need a place to exhibit my work. There's some of that sort of just jumping around. It's so great. He goes from this really sort of introspective thing to like, I got to get out of here and show my work.
We're all going to hell in a handbasket, but I could really use a gig.
Sean O'Mealy, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Noel.